Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-okay.
Little known fact about my guest today. On Sunday nights after family dinner, her grandmother would have the table cleared so that Lilius could get up on it and sing and perform for everybody gathered. And she hasn't stopped performing since. Welcome the incredible Lilius White to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey everyone, my guest today is the Emmy, Tony, Obie, and NAACP award-winning artist Lilius White. Her Broadway credits include The Life, Fella, Barnum, Dreamgirls, Cats, Carrie, Once on This Island, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and Chicago. Some of her other theater highlights include Romance in Hard Times and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. She has appeared in plays, musical, cabarets, and concert halls all around the world. She has appeared in numerous film and television shows, Sesame Street, a personal favorite, and she can be heard on several Broadway cast albums, in addition to her acclaimed live concert album, From Brooklyn to Broadway. And now we're going to talk about her newest solo studio album, Get Yourself Some Happy. I'm getting myself some happy right now because I have the extraordinary Lilius White on the podcast today. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much. Hi, everybody.
We are, we were talking a little before we started recording. It's very hot in New York City.
Sweltering, oppressive, unbearable.
That's right.
Hot enough to fry eggs on the sidewalk.
Yes, or literally on the floor of my apartment right now, inside.
I did that once, you know, in Texas. They
literally?
Said it was hot enough to fry an egg, and I went outside and I fried an egg on the street. It worked.
Yeah. So I'm all the more grateful because, you know, we have to turn off all loud ACs. But yours is broken.
Yeah, the one in the living room was broken. Can you hear this one?
No, I can't. Okay. Oh, I can't. So I only hear your speaking voice, which I love as much as your singing voice.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm talking to you today from your hometown, Brooklyn, New York, USA. Yeah. And I just wanted to, when I say Brooklyn, like, what comes to mind for you?
The first thing that comes to mind is the Brooklyn Public Library, Eastern Parkway, Prospect Park, the Botanical Gardens, Coney Island, St. John's Place, Utica Avenue, PS 167, Wingate High School. I think about those things. When I think of Brooklyn, I really smile because I do love Brooklyn a lot. I keep saying one of these days I'm going to move back there, but it has to be an apartment that's, you know, like this with a view of the city and the water and the
all the things you deserve.
All the things that I love. So yeah, I love Brooklyn. It was a very, very integrated, diverse place for me growing up. And I think it's probably a little different now, but I grew up in a neighborhood that had all kinds of kids, all kinds of people from different places around the world. And I had my grandmother, God bless her soul. My grandmother was good friends with the egg lady who had a little shop on Schenectady Avenue. And the egg lady, her family had a farm, and they brought in fresh eggs, and they brought in this beautiful cheese, and they had these barrels and barrels of pickles and pickled tomatoes. And so I'm just saying that to say that my grandmother taught us to be sweet, to be nice. She said there are two kinds of people in the world, good people and bad people. And that's how I grew up.
And who was in the house that you grew up in?
There was my mother, and for a short while, my father. But they didn't get along very well, so he wasn't there for the majority of my childhood. But there was my grandmother, my Aunt Ella, my brothers, Timothy and William. And we had a dog named Georgie. He was a wire-haired fox terrier. Beautiful pedigree dog, gorgeous dog, crazy as hell.
Okay. And you still have animals.
Yes, I still have animals. I have a beautiful cat. Where is he? He's over here. Beautiful Bengal cat. And my dog is somewhere under something, because when it's hot like this, she gets down close to the floor. And so she's under the bed or under the couch, or she's somewhere.
Where are you, like, in the birth order with your brothers?
I'm the eldest and the only girl.
Okay. So mm-hmm. What was your relationship like with them?
Well, I'm closest to my brother, who is, he's 11 months younger than me.
Oh, really close so, in age.
Yeah, so they call us Irish twins.
Yep.
And so I'm closest to him. In fact, I just spoke to him on the phone a few minutes ago. But I have a younger brother, William, who was the family pain in the butt. He was always getting in trouble for something. He wasn't vicious or anything like that. He was mischievous, and he had a propensity for sounds. He liked sounds. He got in trouble once because he was throwing rocks at windows on a new building in the neighborhood, and he was breaking the windows. And the people were working on the building, and they couldn't figure out why the windows always broken when we come here. So they finally found out it was him. And my mother said, William, why are you doing that? Why did you break the windows? And he said, Mom, I like the sound. So now he's a professional percussionist. He plays congas and percussions. He's really good at it. And that's William.
Well, speaking of sounds, I mean, I imagine this glorious voice, the vocal stylings of Lilias White, as they've become known globally. You must have been singing as a kid.
I was singing as a kid. My grandmother used to have family dinners every Sunday.
Did you have a big family or just for your family?
Yeah, well, my grandmother had six children.
Oh, wow.
My uncle had five kids, and my mother's oldest brother had five kids. And then Aunt Dolly had three, Aunt Lil had three. My grandmother had 14 grands by the time she passed away.
Okay.
And she had some great grands by the time she passed away. So it was mandatory attendance every Sunday. And my grandmother, she made the best food. As you know, grandmothers used to do back then. I don't know.
What are some of the things make? I'm starving, so let me sensorily experience what it is.
Okay, she would make fried eggplant. Mm. She would take the eggplant and slice it. You know, peel off the skin, slice it. She would beat some eggs, and put a little salt and pepper, and she would dip the eggplant in the batter, then she would put it in some cornmeal, and she put it in some hot Crisco and fry it. Oh, I was in heaven. And she would make string beans. But while she was making the string beans, I'd sit there and watch her, and she would bite the raw string beans. She would eat some of it, and I would watch her do that, and then she'd let me taste it. And I said, just string beans, and she'd make, macaroni and cheese. And she'd make pies and cakes, cobblers. she made homemade ice cream.
Oh my gosh.
She could cook anything. There was roast, there was ham, there was everything you could want your tongue to taste. Mm. She would make it, and it was just the best food. And so after dessert, my grandfather's job was to do the dishes. And so she would tell my grandfather to clear the table. And she'd say, clear the table too, because my baby's going to sing and dance. And they would put me up on my grandmother's dining room table to entertain my family. My Aunt Lilias, who I'm named after, was a dancer with the June Taylor Dance Company that was on the Jackie Gleason show. And she was quite fair-skinned. So she, you know, was on the show. But when she got married, back in those days, when she got married, you stopped show business. So, but Aunt Lilias was my personal go-to person for the arts. I mean, she dressed me up in crinoline dresses, and I always had big bows in my short hair. And she gave me the little socks with the lace around the ankle and the T-straps, patent leather shoes, and so she encouraged me. She said, go ahead, baby. And she would she'd clap her hands. And till the day she died, whenever she saw me performing, she would just cry. She would cry. So my Aunt Lilias was, and my Aunt Dolly was a painter and artist. Her husband was also a painter and artist. He did murals and he did portraits. My Aunt Ella played the piano a little bit. My cousin Marjorie, I hope she's retired from teaching, but she still plays the piano. And so we had a lot of music. My aunts and uncles were young adults when I was a kid. So okay. I got to hear all the popular music of that time. I listened to Dinah Washington and Johnny Mathis. And I loved Barbara Streisand. So my mother, also I'm rambling, but my mother would.
Are you kidding? This is a dream.
My mother would, when I got to be a teenager, I fell in love with rock and roll, of course, and Motown and all that stuff. So my mother would give me money to buy 45s. So I had stacks of 45s. We had a beautiful hi-fi record player. And so I spent a lot of time in the house, in front of my mirror, in the living room, with either a spoon or a hairbrush. And I had another aunt who worked across the street in a beauty parlor, and she used to make wigs. And so she'd make wigs, and sometimes she'd give me some wigs to play with, and I'd take the wigs and I'd fashion the wigs after Diana Ann Ross or Gladys Knight or whoever. And I was in my living room performing, singing. And sometimes my brothers would say, oh, Mom, make her shut up, you know. But now I make them pay.
Exactly. Yeah. Were you dreaming of doing this professionally? Did you imagine yourself as a singer when you were a grown-up?
I never really did, you know. I don't remember thinking I was going to be a singer until I was in college. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to be a ballerina. At that time, there was nothing like that. You know, ballet classes are available for someone like me, being a Black child in the neighborhood. My mother did put me in a ballet class, for a while. But it
was it not in your neighborhood? Did you have to travel to go to it?
I had to travel to go to it. And and one time I lost the money. I don't know if I'm remembering this, but I lost the money that my mother had given me for the class. And I think that she thought it might have been too much for me to be walking that distance by myself. And so she said, okay, well then, you know, you're not going to do this. But I did think about, singing was always incidental to me. It was also always something that I did it, but I never thought much of it as a kid. And I was into taking care of people. So I wanted to be a nurse. And I was always taking care of people's babies. My mother was also a child care.
I was going to ask what she did when you were growing up. Was she in?
While I was growing up, she took care of people's babies.
Did those kids come to your house, or would she go to their homes?
They came to our house.
Okay.
So there were always kids around. there were always babies around, and I loved that. So I would help my mother, and I'd take care of those babies along with her, to the point where some of the boys in the neighborhood thought those kids were mine, so they kind of stayed away from me, which was fine with my mother, honey.
The best contraception
yes.
she could have dreamed of. You know, I'm fast forwarding decades with this, but I am suddenly flooded with a memory of what is one of the most memorable, beautiful Tony speeches in history, which was yours for the life. And that moment where you can see the wheels turning and the heart beating and your passion and exuberant self shining through. And then you take a moment because your kids are there.
Yes.
And the miracle that the cameraman was able to get those beautiful faces onto the camera at that moment. And it really was like, it gives me chills thinking about it. It's such an extraordinary moment. And that, like, your kids' minds must have been blown at that moment.
They blew my mind that evening because they were crying. They were so overwhelmed that they were crying. And I thought, you little boogers are crying. And you gave me such a hard time.
Every day when you left for work, they like tortured you about it.
They didn't mind me going to work because, you know, they liked me going to work because I told them if I don't go to work, I don't get paid. If I don't get paid, then, you know, who's going to take care of me?
Nothing is good. Yeah.
Exactly. So, but they had done so many, it had been very naughty in the weeks prior to that Tony. They had been very naughty.
In what way? Because you are so busy doing so many luncheons and events and you're not around.
Yeah, well.
And you had won every award for that show. So you were really busy.
Yeah, I won everything. I won every award they can give you in the theater they gave to me for the
That's life. Right. That's right. And your kids were what?
They were, I want to say he was 9 and she was 14, something like that.
Okay. So 14-year-old trouble.
Yeah. Let me just say, without going into detail, they had been very bad. And so my nerves were a little on edge. And I worked really hard I got my friend to dress them because I didn't have time to do it. We were doing Tony rehearsals and the show and the interviews and all that stuff. And so my friend came and he found the perfect outfit for her and for him. And they looked beautiful. My mother was there in the audience.
Incredible.
And my then boyfriend was there in the audience. And those kids crying. And I said, look at these two here. I should be the one crying, but you know. Anyway, so they were really bad. And
you're really not going to tell us.
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry I'm laughing. I don't know why.
Okay. No, I'm laughing at it now, but it was not funny.
It was not funny at the time. Okay. No. Where do you keep your Tony?
It's on a shelf in my living room. It's, in fact, on the top shelf of my living room, along with the Drama Desk Award and the Out of Critics Circle Award. And the Friends of New York Award.
Incredible.
Friends of New York Theater Award. And, you know, they're very much coveted by me because it was just a sensational time in my life. And it was a role that was made for me. It was written for me by Cy Coleman, Ira Gassman. And it changed my life.
Well, how did you, I mean, when you think about it, did you go see Broadway shows when you were growing up? Did you listen to cast recordings?
I listened to cast recordings all the time.
Okay, so you had the bug.
I had the bug. I mean, I just loved it. And I remember watching the Tony Awards. I remember watching a show called Soul that used to be on PBS.
Okay.
And seeing different performers. My mother brought me show tune albums. I knew every character, every word of Annie Get Your Gun. I knew every character and every word of My Fair Lady. I sang all of the songs and all of the voices in West Side Story. I was Anita. I was Maria. I was the man. I was everybody. in my living room. So we didn't get to see shows on Broadway very much, but my mother took us every year, twice a year, to Radio City Music Hall. And we went to see the Christmas shows and the Easter shows.
Sure.
And back then there was no Ticketron, so you couldn't get your tickets in advance. You had to go to the box office at Radio City Music Hall to get the tickets. So for the Christmas shows, my mother would bundle us up, and we have on layers and layers of clothes so we wouldn't be cold. She would prepare thermoses of hot chocolate and make peanut butter jelly sandwiches. And we would go to Radio City Music Hall. Oh, you can make me cry. And my mother. And we'd wait in line. We'd probably be the first in line because my mother was always early. I wish I'd inherited that gene, but my mother was always early. So we'd get there on really, really early and get our tickets. And when the doors opened, we'd rush in and we'd be in the first or second row at Radio City Music Hall for the Christmas show.
Incredible.
And so those were the things, those were the events that shaped my life and that made me different from a lot of the kids in my neighborhood who didn't get out of the neighborhood very often.
Yeah.
And my mother was, I don't know, she was really ahead of her time, and she knew things that someone from her background maybe wouldn't have known. You know, she was from a small island in South Carolina, and she came to New York as a young woman, and I think she first worked as the post office, and she had different jobs. She worked as a domestic for a while, and she dressed really beautifully. And she was into the culture. She was into the arts. And so she took us in, and she took us there. She took us to those places. And it's that stuck with me my whole life.
And so what was that, you know, for most of the guests that I am fortunate and honored to have on this show, they are the most extraordinary, you know, living artists of our time. And I would say that all of them have this moment where it's like, there's this God-given talent, there's the nurturing of the talent, there are the teachers along the way who saw it, your mother, who nurtured a love and respect for the arts, your family, which is filled with talent. What was the luckiest thing that happened, and that because that happened, you made this album, Get Yourself Some Happy, this year? Like, what is the lucky thing that took Lilias from someone who dreamed it to being really appreciated and known for it and respected for it?
I think there were a number of things that happened. I went to a high school, In junior high school, I had a teacher, my Spanish teacher, Señora Achetino. And she was a little Cubana lady. She was a Cuban. She was gorgeous. She was about 5.5 feet tall. And she had long, beautiful auburn hair. And she used to wear really red lipstick. And she had very, very good sized lips, these red lipsticks. And she would pronounce the words very carefully, buenos dias, to make sure that you got the pronunciation. And I was a good student. I loved learning Spanish. I loved practicing it. One of my aunts was also studying, so she would listen to Spanish radio. And so I was into it. And then I had kids next door who were from Puerto Rico. And when we were together, they wouldn't allow me to speak English. So I had to practice my Spanish, and it was great. And then Señora Achetino found out from my English teacher that I could sing. And my English teacher found out from somebody else in the school. It wasn't my music teacher, because my music teacher was a racist. And so anyway, they found out that I could sing. And my Señora Achetino taught me these songs in Spanish. So that was one thing. Mm-hmm. There was another teacher, Mrs. Mosley. And she might have been the one that told my English teacher that I had a good voice.
Yeah.
And she was just a lovely, caring woman. She lived in the neighborhood, which was a regular thing back then. I don't know how many teachers live in the neighborhoods anymore.
Right, you know?
Like policemen and firemen used to live in the neighborhoods.
Yes.
And I think that's a reason why, you know, a lot of kids are they get into trouble because there's nobody around to say, hey, I'm going to tell your mother, come here, let me take you home to your mother.
Right.
You know, instead of taking them to jail.
Right.
You know, anyway,
of course. Yeah.
So I had those teachers. And then in high school, I had a wonderful dance teacher. When I went to high school, they made it so that you didn't have to take, if you wanted to take a side class that was not a mandate, you know, not a major class, you could take, instead of taking physics, you could take a dance class.
Okay.
So I got a dance class. I got into dance class with a woman named Estelle Rogers. She was a tall, lanky woman with kind of reddish, brownish hair. She wore glasses, thick glasses. And she knew everybody in the dance world. So in addition to us learning dance from her, we were able to go and see dance rehearsals with the Nicolai Company and the Alvin Ailey Company.
Wow.
We were allowed to go backstage and look at costumes and examine toe shoes and all those sort of things. And so it was wonderful. And as it turned out, two of the people that I was really close with in high school we were in dance class together, they went on to work on Broadway. They got there a lot sooner than I did because I was in a theater company and it took me a while to get it.
Right.
But so I had a lot of great teachers. I had a wonderful teacher, Sheldon. What's his name? Oh my goodness, Mr. Sheldon. And he was my first voice teacher. I was very blessed that I was well-mannered and I had people that took an interest in me and helped
me. Were you confident?
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
So you had all of these talents and all these people seeing you and believing in you, except for that racist music teacher.
Yeah.
I
wasn't confident at all.
Are you confident now?
Yeah, I think so.
You know what you can do.
I know what I can do, and I know that I love what I do.
Mm-hmm.
That I know for sure. And I enjoy having people enjoy what I do. And sometimes I'm another person on the stage. I become some other person, some other entity. I know the music, I go for it, I go for the notes, I go for the feeling. And it becomes not about me or not about the audience. It becomes about me interpreting whatever song I'm singing.
Well, and if you think about, I mean, the number, I mean, you've done so many roles in so many places, but if we even just look at Broadway, I mean, the woman who is in Fella is the same woman who's in The Life, who's the same woman in How to Succeed, like Dream Girls. I mean, you're a true character actress in that way. I mean, you
yes.
are able to get lost in these worlds that are so different. I mean, it would be really hard to go, oh yeah, I see what she does, right? I mean, the bounty that you have brought to the stage with you and for us is just, so I wanna just, I have two questions. When you say The Life was created for you,
yes.
And that you had quite a journey with it. How come? Where was the kernel like of the idea that we want Lilias to be the centerpiece of this show?
I was doing a show called Tintypes in Florida.
Okay.
And my agent called me and said, they want you to come and audition for Barnum to replace Terry White.
Okay.
And so I flew from Florida and I auditioned for Cy Coleman and Joe Layton in the St. James Theater for the role of Joyce Heth in Barnum. I did Barnum, I got the role. the audition was really funny and I sang my go-to audition song at that time was Don't Rain on My Parade. So I sang that song and then they said, okay, do you know any circus work, any circus tricks or anything. So I had done a performance, a run of a show called Waiting for Godot with all female cast in clown face and clown costumes. And I had to learn how to juggle for that role, the role of Vladimir. And so I had learned how to juggle. So
so they had me crazy? Juggle. These things you have to do that you're like, why are they making me do this?
To get a job, right?
And
I needed the job because I was a single parent of a small child. So I needed the job. So they gave me the bean bags and I started juggling and I was really, really rusty. So the bean bags were falling down and I picked them up and I said to this cavernous room of the St. James Theater, I said, well, it gets better. And Cy Coleman laughed and laughed. He thought it was so funny. He says, don't worry about it. You got the job. So they told me on the spot that I got the job. Wow. So that started my relationship with Cy Coleman and Joe Layton.
Okay.
So I did Barnum until the end. And then the end of Barnum, I fell and broke my elbow. So I was recuperating from that when I got a call that they wanted me to come and audition for a new show that Cy Coleman and Joe Layton were putting together. So I went to the audition. My arm was in a sling.
Juggling for you.
No juggling. Every black diva in New York was there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all looking really pretty and spelt, and nobody had an arm in a sling but me. And I thought, oh, well, I guess.
Yeah.
So during the course of the audition, they were auditioning people for different personalities, different singers. Somebody had to audition for the Go-Go's. Somebody had to audition for Elvis Presley, that kind of thing.
Right.
So when they called, it said, who can sing Aretha Franklin? Everybody, all the girls rushed to the mic, and I wasn't running anywhere because I had a sling already, and I wasn't trying to fall down. So when I got to the mic, I sang my little part, ooh, you kiss ass, sweeter than honey. And so anyway, I got the job. So it was Joe Layton. And Joe Layton was, the show was called Rock and Roll the First 5,000 Years. So we worked on this show, 6 weeks of rehearsal. It was wonderful. Brenny Lee did the costumes. They were really extraordinary. It was a state of the art, ahead of its time kind of show with multimedia going on. It was incredible, but it was a flop.
Okay.
Opened and then like a week or two later, we closed. So it was devastating. So I'm sitting home, I'm going, okay, this has never happened. I don't know what to do
with
myself.
That is, people don't even understand how devastating
they don't. You don't understand what that means to put your heart and soul, 6-8 weeks of rehearsal, costume fittings, rehearsal, everything.
And then, forming a family.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So anyway, the show opened and closed. So I'm sitting home and I get a call some months later from Joe Layton. Cy Coleman calls me and he says, Liz, Joe and I are putting a show together and we got a role that we want for you, written for you. I want you to come in here and learn the music. So I didn't know what it was, but it was Cy Coleman. And what happened was during the course of me being in Barnum, my family met Cy Coleman. And my mother had loved his music for forever, and I didn't even know that.
Wow.
And she met him, and she's, oh, my God. My mother was gaga over Cy Coleman, and he was such a sweetheart. So anyway, so I go to this thing, and they're playing this music for me. And they say, okay, this is the role. They told me what it was about. It was about pre-Disney Times Square. And, she's a hooker and all that. And it didn't really bother me. I thought, well, some of the best actresses I know play hookers.
Yeah.
Shirley MacLaine, for one. And so anyway, so they teach me these songs. I say, okay. And little by little, they put it together. And this is the life. And so we did a small presentation of it. I think we did a couple weeks run at the West Beth Theater down in the Village.
Sure.
And so that was in 1990. And between 1990 and the time we opened in 96, We did so many backers auditions, so many presentations for people to get the money, and we didn't know if it was ever going to happen. Finally, in 1996-97, they say, okay, the show's going to go, we're going to open. And we go into 6 weeks of rehearsal, and it's put together, and the costumes are made, and we open. And we didn't know how people were going to accept it, because it was about hookers and pimps, and it was a rough kind of show. It was not for your kids.
Right.
Although my kids did see a few rehearsals, and their eyes were big as saucers.
Well, and then you were on Rosie.
Yeah.
Well, you were on Rosie a lot,
Rosie a few times.
Yeah.
So the show did really well. We got great reviews. Everybody, it was nominated for, 12, 13, 14 Tony Awards. And we were very happy until they said we were going to close, and they gave us a week notice.
So the landlords were like,
no, it was one of the producers didn't want to invest any further. They gave us a notice, and we closed. But I won the Tony, the Drama Desk, the Out of Critics Circle, the Friends of New York Theater Award. Chuck Cooper won the Tony Award. And it was really a show that changed my life, and it changed how people came to see theater. Because this was a story that could have been about two nurses or, just a couple of best friends who work as doctors, who work as postal workers. It happened to be about these people who were in the life of selling their bodies.
But so humanizing. Yeah.
And I remember seeing these little old ladies, we call them on Wednesdays, they come in for the matinees, we call them the blue rinse crowd. And they come in because they got the hair, the white hair with the blue in it. But they came in, and we didn't know what to expect from them.
Yeah.
Because, of the rough nature of the show, of the material. But they were always, always moved. And, you could see them at the end crying, for that last song, You Are My Friend.
And women supporting women, and friendship, and yes, respect, and all of those things. And
yes,
and it was you. And that your mom got to see that.
Yes.
And be there for that. And I mean, I think about the fact that you are, for so many years, a single mom navigating that, and yeah, navigating what you did, the way your mom navigated being a single mom for you guys, and
yes,
and what friends and family, the kind of support, the village that yes, has to happen for you to do that.
It takes a village, no
yeah,
doubt.
I want to, first of all, will you come back again? Because I know how busy you are, but we've scratched the surface of your extraordinary career, but we have. I mean, from Brooklyn to Broadway is one of my all-time favorite listens. And now the world gets another Lilias White extravaganza. Get yourself some happy,
yes,
greatest title. Titles are so hard to find. You're so good at that. Tell me just what this was born out of. Did you make this during the our pandemic,
no,
or was this before?
This was before.
Okay.
This was recorded in 2019 up in Vermont at the Old Mill Road Studios in East Arlington, Vermont. It is an extraordinarily beautiful recording studio. It sits on a river. And it's you could see the river from where you are in the studio.
So while you're singing, you're looking at that beautiful,
yes,
vista. Wow.
Yes, it's gorgeous. So this was a brainchild of Dr. Joshua Sherman, who's a very dear friend of mine of more than 20 years. And he and I, when we met doing a show that his mother and his aunt created. We did a show called Rockwell, based on the life of Rockwell, the artist, Rockwell.
Norman Rockwell. Yeah.
And I got to play a character called Amy the Wild Woman. And she was one of the characters in this circus. You'd have to see it.
But is it sort of based on his paintings and then sort of creating? Okay.
No, it's based on his life. It's based on his life.
Got it. Okay.
His life with his wives. He had different wives and how he was. You know, he was different. So anyway, Josh and I met on that, and we talked about recording an album since then. Timothy Graffenreid, who has passed away, Timothy Graffenreid passed away March 1st, 2020. And before that, in 2019, we went up to Vermont and we took, week or 10 days, we were up there and we just pulled some songs. We made a list, each of us made a list of songs that we'd like to record. And so we got up there and we mashed the list together and we had to, you know, obviously take some stuff off, but we all contributed to this list of songs. And Timothy was wonderful at making arrangements of songs that were different from what you're used to hearing. Okay. So he arranged them. We recorded them with just piano. So what you're hearing is Timothy on piano and the other musicians had to be added.
I see.
So Timothy and I are live in the studio, but the other stuff is added onto
You would never know that from listening. I've had the privilege of a sneak preview, and it's so layered and beautiful, and it's so gorgeously orchestrated, and your vocals are just chef's kiss, as they say.
Thank you.
And when we finish our conversation, my listeners are going to get a listen to one of the tracks, because I can't not let them hear it early. Lilias, it's an extraordinary album, and every song just feels like it was handpicked to suit your voice, and the way you tell a story with a song is really like nobody else, and I can't wait for everyone to get to listen to it, and then for you to get to perform it for people live.
That's what I'm hoping, that because of what we've been through in the past several months, we couldn't have planned this title. We couldn't have planned to have this kind of compilation of songs. It just happened that we picked some songs that we really loved. And I tend to pick songs that I love the lyrics to, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If the lyric speaks to me and the melody, you know, follows suit, then I'm all in. So based on, you know, what we've been going through, I think that, you know, whether you like the songs or not, whether you like my voice or not, these are songs, something on this album is going to make you smile. Something on this album is going to bring back a memory of joy for you from somewhere in your past. And that is the purpose of, you know, of us doing this. It's to bring joy and to lift spirits and to make you smile and to make you move. You know, there's one of the numbers on the album is The Twist. So we're going to have a few people go to the chiropractor, maybe, you know, try to get that twist. Come on, baby, let's do the twist, you know.
But we also need inspiration to get up and move our bodies again.
We need that. Yeah. We need that, and we need to have something to listen to that lightens our load and that takes us out of the mishigash and the mess that the world is in. You know, something that will make us smile and smile.
Yeah.
From the heart.
But when you speak Yiddish, like mishigash, I mean, we've just gotten a million more listeners. Very exciting.
I grew up in Brooklyn, you know, I got lots of Jewish friends, you know what I mean? I'm no Meshuggah, I'll tell you, okay?
Well, the only thing I'm going to say is there is no one who will listen who doesn't like your voice or doesn't like the songs that you've chosen. That's actually an impossibility. Before you go, is there a little known fact that you can share about you since you are on the Little Known Facts podcast?
Okay, little known facts. I'm single. And I would like to have a nice man in my life.
Okay.
He's got to have all his teeth.
Fair enough.
Or somebody's tea.
Yeah. So, tea. We don't care whose, but they have to be in his mouth.
Like, yeah, you know, he has to look good. He has to love animals. He has to have his own money and preferably lots of it. He has to know how to drive. And he has to like to travel, and he has to like the beach. And he has to like my skin. I have lovely skin. So he has to like that. And I'm single. So that's a little known fact. I don't know if that's a little known fact or not. But I've got this opportunity to say, hey, I'm here. I'm healthy. I'm lovely. I could cook too.
Listen, did you hear that eggplant recipe she shared with her grandmothers earlier? Come on. Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want that? Lily Swite, I have no doubt that we have solved that today.
It would be nice.
Right? Okay. Well, we are going to end this episode by playing one of your incredible songs. Thank you for being here today. And thank you for just being the human activist, artist, beautiful person that you are.
Thank you so much. It was a joy to be here.
Imagine me and you. I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the one you love and hold him tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me and ease my mind, imagine how the world could be so very fine, so happy together. I can't see me loving nobody but you for all my life. When you're with me, baby, the skies will be blue for all my life. They toss the dice. It had to be. The only one for me is you. You for me. So happy together. Imagine me and you. I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the one you love and hold him tight. So happy together.
When one more thing. So many of you have asked, how do you donate to the podcast? Well, it could not be easier. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Instructions are clearly laid out, and I'm so grateful to you in advance for any donation you choose to make. But regardless, I have loved making the previous 200 and something episodes for you. I can't wait to make 200 more. I wish you a beautiful day. Stay healthy, be safe. Until next time. The episode was edited by Nicholas Klar. We recorded in New York City, and the Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded by Georgia Famusa with backups by Caleb Famusa.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.